Hello and welcome to the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Sylvia, brought to you by Duane Morris, an international law firm with roughly 30 offices and 1,000 lawyers all over the world. I'm your host, Joe Sylvia. I'm a former Federal Reserve lawyer who represents banks, fintechs, and financial services clients on M&A, payments, and regulatory matters at Duane Morris. I'm also a core member of our banking, fintech, and digital assets and blockchain practices. Now, while we can't provide legal, financial, investment, or tax advice on the podcast, our goal for the Money and Banking Law Podcast is to inform and educate our clients and friends on both the fundamental concepts and structure of the banking ecosystem, as well as critical developments in the law and regulation of money and banking. Thanks for joining us today. As always, if you have any questions from any of our podcast episodes, please reach out to me at jsylvia@duanemorris.com. Okay, let's jump in.
So I was recently in Scottsdale, Arizona for what I think is my 7th or 8th acquire or be acquired conference. It's put on by an organization called Bank Director. Many of you may be familiar. It's a great organization. They put on really great conferences. And like I said, I've been to this acquire or be acquired conference 7 or 8 times now. It's a really heavy conference in terms of the amount of content. A lot of it is primarily focused on bank mergers and acquisitions, bank M&A, but there are other kinds of content options. Importantly, there's a good bit of content related to financial technology or fintech. I think they call it their FinEx Tech track. And one of the things that was, I guess, interesting but not surprising to me was the amount of content that related in some way to digital assets. You've heard me talk about digital assets before. I'm part of our core digital asset team here at Duane Morris. Been working with a lot of these clients that are digital native companies and financial institutions from a more traditional sense, who are looking to understand more and potentially even dip their toe into the digital asset market, whether it be through, you know, activities or products related to cryptocurrency, stablecoin, or something in between. Anyway, I found it particularly interesting that there was so much discussion with respect to stablecoins, digital assets, and cryptocurrency at this particular conference, because it's really been focused for a long time on traditional financial institutions and mergers and acquisitions. So banks and credit unions and the mergers and acquisitions and some of the kind of the corporate related activities and interests such as corporate governance, board policies, risk management, and so forth. And like I said, they have this FinEx track that is more focused on fintech matters, and I've been honored to speak on in that track before on various issues. But it was this time it seemed a little bit more interesting for folks in the crowd. People were asking more questions, being more thoughtful about things. But at the end of the day, it was still very clear from conversations in the halls of the meeting and outside the halls at the receptions and dinners and so forth, that banks are still, for the most part, and this is a generalized statement, but for the most part, pretty slow in terms of certainly adoption of digital asset products and services, but really more so on some of the understanding. And, you know, this conference draws in really C-suite and board of director level individuals from banks of all shapes and sizes. I'd say it's probably most pertinent for banks in the community and regional bank sector. So call it, you know, $1 to $50 or $60 billion in assets, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, depending on their M&A appetite. But suffice to say, there's still a pretty significant learning gap that appears to be there. And so, you know, we certainly at Duane Morris within the banking, fintech, and digital assets groups have tried to provide as much education as we think is palatable for our traditional financial institution clients. That's something that we continue to do on a regular basis, whether it's via kind of in-person training sessions, virtual training sessions, just additional information that we can provide, connecting them with things like the podcast, where I can talk about very pointed specific issues or very general broad-based types of educational issues. So it's definitely a something that many financial institutions, traditional financial institutions, need to be paying attention to for a lot of reasons. And so, for example, one reason that I say that is having, represented banks for a long time, seen it from the regulatory perspective, the banks have one really significant advantage in my mind with respect to this developing digital asset ecosystem, and that's really the trust that they have with their existing customers or members. Digital asset native companies, digital native companies don't yet have that trust built up. And unfortunately for them, there's more juicy headlines about frauds and failures than there are about anything else for the digital asset ecosystem right now. So the thing that the banks can leverage, if they so choose, is the trust that they have from their customers and members. And it's not to say that they being the banks should be offering all kinds of crazy products and services related to digital assets or cryptocurrency, but rather they have an opportunity. And yes, there's challenges with this ecosystem from a risk perspective, from the regulatory perspective. There are certainly risks, certainly around BSA, AML, sanctions, compliance, and so forth. We can talk about all those in any number of episodes, but the risks are not overall new to banking. Banks are in the risk management business. But with respect to digital assets, while they have these risks and challenges, like I said, there is an opportunity. And the opportunity is really more focused on providing the education to existing customers, members, and so forth, so that when it comes time for more involvement in the digital asset ecosystem, the customers and the members appreciate where the bank or credit union or so forth is coming from with respect to the digital assets that it's offering. It's a great opportunity to leverage the trust that traditional financial institutions have from their customers, members, and so forth, because this digital asset system, cryptocurrencies, they're not necessarily going away. And they're changing the world in a number of different ways, but there's not a clear winner for all things digital assets right now. So again, this is an opportunity for banks and traditional financial institutions to look at their customers, products, and services and decide, okay, well, what we know there's challenges, we know there's risks, but what are the opportunities? Again, something we're talking with our clients a lot about. So what are the opportunities in this area? Is the opportunity related to something in lending? Is it the opportunity just to provide education? Is the opportunity additional touch points with younger members or customers? Where are those opportunities? Because they're certainly there. In addition to the advantage that banks and traditional financial institutions have with respect to customer trust, banks also have the benefit under the Genius Act of being kind of the favorite children right now when it comes to stablecoins, whether it's issuance or otherwise. So under the Genius Act, banks and certain other traditional financial institutions don't have to wait. If they want to go out and issue stablecoins, payment stablecoins, that is, they don't have to wait. They are already equipped to handle it from a regulatory perspective and a licensing perspective. Other institutions that may want to be looking at issuing their own stablecoins in the future, they're kind of on the sidelines for at least 6 to 18 months, by my estimates, because they need to wait for the rules to be issued. And those are not coming anytime soon, at least not soon enough for fintech and digital asset native companies. So banks have that advantage. Now, it doesn't mean that banks, every bank should have its own stablecoin. I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think it's necessary. But it is the case that with respect to stablecoins, blockchain technology, and so forth, banks and other traditional financial players need to understand how this system is developing. They need to understand what blockchain technology is generally. They need to understand what stablecoin is, what the Genius Act is, where Congress sits on certain things. You know, all of the types of educational opportunities that we as lawyers and consultants and risk advisors are offering up all the time, whether it's for CLE, CPE, or some other kind of continuing education credit. So there's any manner of ways to get the education, but it's important that really the C-suite and boards of directors should appreciate some level of what this means going forward for the future of finance. Like I said, it's not that we need 4,000 plus stablecoins for every bank and 4,000 plus stablecoins, you know, for every credit union in the country. That doesn't make any sense, but it's something that's important because at some point, if stablecoins, in particular for payment purposes, continue on the trajectory that they are, and again, in particular for international payments, international remittance payments, financial institutions really do need to understand what these new payment rails look like. And it's not to say that they have to understand each piece of the blockchain technology and all the fancy terminology, just like most traditional financial institutions, or at least C-suite level individuals or boards of directors, may not understand every intricacy and nook and cranny involved in the ACH system and how one payment gets from one point to another and what each of the points mean and how they work and what the timing is and so forth. But rather, they understand that an ACH works. They don't need to know the inside plumbing, but they know that it works and they know that it's trusted. And so over time, I think that's probably how it will work out with stablecoins, at least in terms of a payment mechanism. Over time, because the customers and members are learning, hopefully learning from banks, from their banking and credit union institutions, how to send payments as stablecoins over blockchain technology instantly at a dramatic fraction of the cost. You know, the banks will be there to support them, and people will be more inclined to use the stablecoin payment mechanism because it is cheaper, faster, arguably better and stronger. Time will tell on that, right? Everything will take a little bit of time. This is not to say that the world is going to change in the matter of a couple of days. But all in all, banks have the advantage of being essentially first movers or potentially first movers with respect to a lot of the digital asset technologies and digital asset products and services because they've been in this traditional financial product role for decades. So it's a long-winded way of saying that Acquire or Be Acquired was a great conference again this year. Bank director put on a great one. Had a lot of fun catching up with friends that are coming from investment banking boutiques, friends from large and small banks, credit unions, and consulting firms. So just another great conference. I think one of the things that I've been talking about or thinking about for the podcast going forward is to break things down a little bit more, not to necessarily provide legal advice because I can't do that, but at least not on the podcast, but to break some relatively mundane and intricate topics into more palatable sessions to help listeners understand kind of the dynamics of the banking, fintech, and digital asset ecosystem. Things, you know, simple things like definitions that you can find in the Bank Holding Company Act or Reg Y, or, you know, definitions found in state consumer credit laws that are important for any number of fintech platforms that might be looking at, you know, lending or credit or what have you. So there's just a ton of stuff to unpack. And fortunately for you all, I'm a pretty big nerd in this area, so I enjoy doing it, whether it's for a podcast, for a client, or otherwise. But hopefully that'll provide some additional support in in a general way, so that, you know, if we get the chance to work together in the future, you're armed with a good amount of knowledge to go into it. So, again, great conference out in Phoenix, great weather. Obviously, was able to get a couple of rounds of golf in with some clients and friends, so that works out well too. Anyway, that's all I got for today. So I'll sign off, and I'll look forward to talking to you all again soon. Thanks so much.